Good evening. Let me again welcome everyone that's here, especially those that are chose to visit with us tonight. We are especially thankful that you've and honored that you've come our way. We appreciate you doing that and hope you'll come back and be with us again anytime you have an opportunity. And hang around a little bit after and let us greet you personally. We'd like to do that. I appreciate the opportunity to speak. I enjoy doing it. I enjoy the preparation that it requires me to do. So I appreciate the opportunity the elders give us to do that. I want you to think along with me tonight a little bit. Hopefully it'll be something that'll be useful to you. I think it's probably safe to say that when each one of us get up in the morning and say our prayers for the morning and start planning out our day, thinking about all the things we're going to accomplish, that we don't prepare, we don't plan to sin, do we? We don't plan to make a mistake. We don't plan to fall short. But many times, for lots of us, when we go home that night and we're getting ready for bed and we're saying our prayers at the end of the day, that's exactly what we've done. We've made a mistake. We've fallen short, and we're having to ask forgiveness for that. And sometimes, many times, it seems like I'm a repeat offender. It's something that I've asked forgiveness for before. And here I am once again before God begging forgiveness because I have fallen short. I have made that mistake again. Why does that happen? You ever thought about that? Why do we have these things that seem to get in our way and continually tempt us? And temptation's what I want to think about a little bit. You know, Peter said in 1 Peter 5:8 that your adversary, the devil, prowls around you like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. I do definitely believe that. Satan looks for us. He prowls for us sometimes. But also, I think sometimes Satan hunts us like we hunt prey, like we hunt wild game. Sometimes we set a trap, don't we? We set a snare. We put it in a place where that prey travels constantly, and we set that snare, and we leave, and we wait. And we wait for that unsuspecting animal or game to come along, and we catch him in that snare. And I think Satan sometimes does that to us. He sets a snare for us. He sets a trap, and that trap is temptation. That trap is something that tempts us, a desire that we have. James 1:14-15, but each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. Temptation isn't something supernatural. Temptation isn't something magical, is it? It's our own desire, James says. And then desire, when it's conceived, gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is fully grown, brings death. There's this progression that we go through, right? It starts with this desire, our own desire that we have. But it often leads to, when it's conceived, it leads to sin. And sin, of course, we know leads to death. In 1 John, Carl mentioned this in his Bible class Wednesday night. I had been thinking about it. 1 John chapter 2. Verse 15, do not love the world or the things in the world, but anyone who loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the desires of the flesh, the desires of the eyes, pride of life, it is not from the Father, but is from the world. What are these desires that tempt us? What are these desires that, if manifest, become sin? Well, it's these things, right? John is defining them for us here. Desires of the flesh, desires of the eyes, and pride of life. Those are the tools that Satan uses, right? Those are the desires that he's looking to tempt us with. And I think as Christians, we need to be educated about that. We need to be looking out for the things that would tempt us, that draw us into sin. And these are the weapons. These are the things that Satan uses. Let's look at a couple temptations that are in the Bible. And let's consider how these three desires, these three tools are used by Satan. The first one, of course, I want to look at is the first temptation that's recorded in the Bible, and that would be with Eve and the serpent in the garden. We find that in Genesis 3, and the serpent was more crafty than any of the other beasts of the field that the Lord God had made. And of course, we know the serpent deceives Eve. He lies to her. He tells her a half-truth, which is really a full lie, right? He says, you're not going to die. God had said, don't eat of that tree. But the statement says, you will not, verse 4, but the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die. But verse 5, God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. There's that lie. There's that deceit. But how did he tempt the woman? How was Eve tempted into the tree? Look at verse 6. So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, okay, there's our first desire, right? There's that desire of the flesh, right? The fruit looked good for food. Let me ask you, is that a natural desire? Sure it is, right? The desire to eat, that's a natural thing, right? A desire to be replenished by this fruit. But of course, what made it wrong was it was the fruit that God said do not eat of, right? When we direct those desires towards something that God says do not do, then they're wrong. And in this case, that's exactly what Eve did. She said it was good for food, the desires of the flesh. And then it was a delight to the eyes. That's the desire of the eyes, right? As it was said in 1 John. That desire, as she looked at it, looked appealing. It looked attractive to her. It looked like something that would excite her or entertain us, those desires of the eyes. A lot of times it's about entertaining us. It's about something that's exciting to us. It's glittery. It attracts us. It gets our attention. Well, that's what this had done for Eve, right? It was a delight to the eyes. That's how we know it wasn't kiwi, right? We know it wasn't some ugly fruit, right? It was probably some fruit that, you know, if I were Adam, I would have cut that down after they left the garden, right? But also, look at the last one. That the tree was a desire to make one wise. There's that pride of life, right? That desire, and we all deal with this, and some folks worse than others. I certainly have struggled with it over the years, of that pride, that thing that builds us up, that gets us excited, right? That makes us feel special. Well, this was about power, wasn't it? This was about the ability to have knowledge of good and evil, to be, as Satan, as the serpent told her, to be like God, right? She wanted to be like God. She wanted to be powerful. She wanted to have this knowledge. And this fruit, eating of this fruit, it tempted her because of that desire, that pride of life. So we have all three of those components that Satan is using against Eve, right? The desire of the flesh, the desire of the eyes, and the pride of life, all together there, attacking Eve. And of course, he's successful. He gets her to eat it. She gets Adam to eat it. She brings sin into the world. We know the rest of the story. But we see Satan using that and how he's used that. Now, let's look at another story. Now, flip over if you want to read along with me. This is Matthew 4. Matthew 4, this is Christ, Jesus Christ on earth. He's been baptized. He's beginning his ministry. And he's going to be tempted. It says there in the first verse, Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And after fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. That has to be one of the largest understatements of the Bible, right? You fast for 40 days, yeah, you're hungry, all right? You're real hungry. And Jesus was hungry. He had fasted. Now let's look at how Satan's going to tempt him. Verse 3, the tempter came and said to him, if you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread. Satan's telling Jesus, you don't have to be hungry. Why are you making yourself miserable? You can fix that right here. You can turn these stones to bread and be replenished, to have the food that you desire. Again, was that desire sinful? Was that desire to eat? No, it was a natural thing, right? It was a natural a part of his body. It needed to eat. He hadn't eaten in 40 days. But again, if he does it because of Satan, if he does it because it's something against God's will, he's sinning. And of course, Jesus isn't even going to contemplate that, is it? Look in verse 4. But he answered, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. Jesus is not going to be tempted by the desires of the flesh, is he? He's going to immediately go to what is God's will. Each one of these instances, he's going to the Word of God, isn't he? He's going to something God has said. And I think we take from that that he's going to what would God have him do? What is it that he needs to believe or say or do in this instance? And in this case, he says God would not have him eat that, right? But a man does not live by bread alone. Jesus has rejected, he's resisted that temptation. Verse 5, then the devil took him to the holy city and set him on the pinnacle of the temple and said to him, if you are Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command the angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up, lest you strike your foot against a stone. You know, you may have a hard time. I have a kind of hard time figuring out which category to put this one in, right? Certainly you could consider it appealing to maybe Christ's pride, because it says, if you're the Son of God, do this thing. If you're really God, you can do this thing. And then also, he's appealing to that pride of the eyes, isn't he? Because who wouldn't want to see the angels swoop in and pick him up, just as God had promised, and carry him off and protect him? Who wouldn't want to be protected when he bungee jumps off the top of a temple, right? But Christ, again, he's not going to fall for that. He doesn't even contemplate it. He doesn't even consider it. No, he immediately says, again, it is written, you shall not put the Lord your God to test. He knows that that's testing God. It's testing God's power. He knows that God's capable of doing that. He knows that he's not going to be destroyed if he were to. There's no reason to test God, and he's not going to fall victim to that pride of the eyes. He's not going to fall victim to that temptation. Verse 8, again, the devil took him to a very high mountain, shown him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, all these I will give you if you will fall down and worship me. Wow, now he's really appealing to something we can relate with, right? He's appealing to that power. What would it be like to have offered to you the power of the entire world, right? You are in control of everything. And Satan says, all you got to do is bow down and worship me, and I'll give you everything you see. You know, if you think about it, he was offering Jesus Christ a way out, wasn't he? I mean, did Jesus know what was going to happen to him? Sure he did. He knew the suffering he was going to go through. He knew what was going to happen. He knew the pain and agony, all that it was going to take that was prepared for him. Satan said, you don't have to go through any of that. I'll give you everything you see. All you got to do is bow down to me. And of course, we don't have Jesus falling victim to that, do we? No, he's going to resist it again. He's going to resist this temptation, this pride of life, the feeling it might make him feel to have that power. He says, be gone, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God with him, and him only shall you serve. Jesus has resisted these temptations, all three of these elements. And then the devil left him, it says in verse 11, and behold, the angels came and were ministering to him. You know, if you think about it, this was Satan's one big shot, wasn't it? I mean, if he could sway the Son of God, if he could in some way tempt Jesus to come down and worship him, how does it change the story of the whole world, right? This was his one shot. Do we think Satan really held anything back? Of course not, right? You're going to go loaded with everything you've got. You're going to use every power that you have. And what does he use? Pride of the flesh, right? The pride, desire of the eyes. Pride of life, right? Those desires, those same core desires. And they're the same we saw with Eve. Why is that the case? Because that's all Satan has. That's all he's got for you, right? It's those desires that he's going to use. He used them at the beginning with Eve, and he used them with Jesus Christ. And folks, he uses them with us every day. Those same desires. All we have to do is recognize them. All we have to do is know what they are when they come to us. 1 Peter 5, what are we supposed to do when these things happen? Go back to that verse we talked about, the devil prowling around us like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. Resist him, firm in your faith. Peter says, resist him. Resist those temptations. James 4, submit yourself therefore to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. That's what he did in the case of Jesus, wasn't it? He got his shot. He fired off his ability, everything he had. But Jesus resisted him and he fled. Draw near to God and he will draw near to you. We need to resist those temptations. We need to resist those desires. You know, when I think about resisting, I think about Joseph, right? And Potiphar's wife. And we know the story, right? Even the kids can tell us the story. Potiphar's wife is wanting to commit adultery with him. And she waits till the appropriate time. She gets him there alone. And she grabs a hold of his robe or cloak or whatever he had on his garment. And what does it say? Joseph fled, didn't he? He ran. He ran so aggressively. He ran right out of his cloak, right out of his clothes. Do we flee the temptations in our life that way? What I mean by that is, do we flee them in such a way that sometimes, even to our own detriment or our own embarrassment, we get away from sin? I think all too often, I don't flee aggressively enough, right? I toy with it, I play with it, but I don't want to be embarrassed. I don't want to get up out of that meeting and embarrass myself of what I'm being tempted to do or think about or see. I don't want to get up out of that movie, right? I don't want to be embarrassed. I don't want to do anything that comes to detriment to me. That's exactly what Joseph did, right? We know the consequences that he ended up going to jail over it, right? He went to prison over it. But he was willing to do whatever he had to do to get away from that situation, right? We need to be willing to do that. We need to resist temptation in that way. And be willing to flee sin just as Joseph did. James, the first chapter, says, "Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial." You know, Jesus in Matthew talks about how, you know, if you have to gouge out your eye because it makes you sin, gouge it out. If you have to cut off your hand because it's making you sin, cut it off. You know, we know Jesus isn't asking to have a bunch of followers that don't have hands and are blind, right? That's not what he's looking for. He's saying, do what you have to do to get away from sin. Do what you have to do to remain free of those things. Whatever it is, go to the extreme, folks. Go the distance the way Joseph did. And that's what we need to be thinking about when we think about temptation coming against us. So what I want to do in the time that we have remaining is I want you to think for a minute. Think about the last sin that you had to ask forgiveness for. Now, this might be hard for some people, and for some of us, it's not quite as hard as it ought to be. Think back about what was the last sin that you asked forgiveness for. You got it? Were you a repeat offender? Was it something you had done before? And if it wasn't the last sin, what's the last thing that you struggle with, that you're tempted with repeatedly, and more times than not, maybe you fail to resist that temptation. Think about that a minute. While you're thinking about your thing, let's talk a few minutes about some examples. Just some things that I thought about. You know, when you think about desires of the flesh, it's impossible not to think about sexual sin, right? Sexual fornication, adultery, we talked about that example. You know, we've got a lot of young people here. We've got a lot of folks that aren't married. We've got some young adults at this congregation. This is a huge temptation for you. And hopefully you know that by now. And if you don't, you're going to learn that, right? That you're young. They're going to be people that you become friends with, you spend a lot of time with. You're going to be attracted to them, right? They're going to be attracted to you. You're going to have a huge temptation. And if you're not in marriage, that sexual attraction is going to turn into sin if you let it. And so you need to be prepared for that temptation. You know, if you're still in your parents' house, your parents probably give you rules, right? They give you barriers. They say, you're not going to be in your bedroom with him, right? Alone. You're not going to go in that place by yourself with her. You know, they're not just trying to ruin your life, folks. You know, they're not just trying to make you miserable. They're giving you those barriers because they want you to be protected. They know, we know as parents, how strong a temptation that sexual desire can be, that attraction, right? That desire of the flesh. And it's a natural thing. It is. But it's meant for marriage. And you've got to know that those barriers are protecting you. So to accept those barriers, because they're helping you. They're making it a little easier for you. Don't make it hard on yourself, right? And if the one you're with, and if they're not in line with that, then go find somebody else that'll help you with that, right? Because don't make things harder on yourself. Those of us that are married, you know, how can we not talk about adultery? It's a huge temptation for those of us that are married. And we see marriages destroyed regularly, whether it be a young marriage sometimes, and a lot of times it's an old marriage. And we see adultery destroy that marriage. We see that temptation. And those of us that are in the workplace and we work with the opposite sex, and we have friendships, and we get close to people, and before we know it, something has happened we did not intend to happen, right? I had a close friend years ago, someone we went to church with, and he had an affair on his wife. He committed adultery. And he came forward eventually and asked for forgiveness and corrected that. And I was having breakfast one morning with him, and we were talking about it. And he said, you know, Brian, he said, I never thought I would be that guy. He said, I never thought I would be willing to have an affair on my wife. I never thought it. He said, I didn't think I had it in me. But he did. Exactly what he did. And fortunately, he corrected his life. He got back with his wife. She forgave him, and they're happily married today, some 10 or 15 years later, probably. But my point is, you might be sitting here tonight thinking, I'll never be that person. That'll never happen to me. And let me warn you, it might. Especially if you're thinking that will never happen to you, right? If you're thinking that I'm not going to be tempted by that, well, maybe the right person hasn't come along to tempt you, but you may very well be tempted. And it will be those strong desires that you have a hard time dealing with. And you'll find yourself destroying your life, destroying your marriage, and maybe destroying your soul, right? We need to be on guard for that. You know, I'll tell you something else about adultery. We may be the temptation to somebody, right? It may be, we may not be attracted to that person. We may not be that tempted by that person, but we may be their temptation, right? We may be the person that they are attracted to, and they may set out to have that affair. So we need to be careful about that. We need to build boundaries, just like we do with our kids. Put boundaries between you and that thing. I talked about the kids that were still in the parents' home, the young adults that are not in your parents' homes. You got to build those boundaries yourself, okay? Put those boundaries in place. Set in your mind beforehand, I'm not going to do that thing, okay? And I'm not going to be tempted. And so to protect myself from that, I'm not going to do this, or I'm not going to go here. Build yourself some boundaries and stick to them. They'll help you. Pornography. Jennifer likes to watch movies with Kirk Cameron, speaking of temptation. She likes these Kirk Cameron. He's got this movie, I don't even remember what it's called, and he's dealing with pornography. He's struggling with pornography. And he, finally, when he gets just tired of it, he's done with it, he goes and he grabs the computer and he takes it out into the yard and beats it to pieces with a baseball bat. It's kind of a funny scene, and the neighbor next door thinks he's crazy. And you know, I often think about that because, you know, there's a lot of people. I had an elder in a rather large congregation tell me one time, not this one, but another congregation, say, our general members probably have no idea how many people struggle with pornography. They struggle with that. And it's a private sin, right? It's the kind of thing that happens behind closed doors and there's nobody else there. And it's a very strong desire. Again, it's appealing to the desire of the flesh, which is a natural desire, but you're doing it in a way that is an unnatural thing, right? And it's a sinful thing. And we need to be on guard with that. Do what you have to do. If you have to be Kirk Cameron and destroy your computer, do it. You know, I also think, you know, if that's the kind of sin that you do because you're alone with the computer, don't be alone with the computer, right? You know, it's probably not the kind of thing you're willing to do with other people around. So build some barriers for yourself. Don't be on that technology or that TV or whatever by yourself. Build some barriers. Resist. Do whatever you have to do, as Joseph did. Drugs and alcohol. Lots of people are just terribly addicted to drugs and alcohol. You see it just destroying their lives. You have to resist those things. It may be a natural desire to feel good, you know, but you have to resist those things. You have to do what you need to do. You may need to go seek help. Again, it may be embarrassing to seek help. I'm sure it was embarrassing for Joseph to run out of the house without any clothes on. Get embarrassed. That's okay. You're not the only one, right? You're one of a whole lot of people in this nation that's dealing with drug abuse and alcohol abuse. Go get help. Resist those things. I used to struggle with language when I was younger, using bad language. And I realized that, it was the people that was around me. I worked with some people that used a lot of foul language. And that became normal to me, right? And it embedded itself in my language. You know, you've got to resist those things. Do what you've got to do. Make whatever changes. I remember thinking, I don't want these people talking this way around me. And I started telling them, please don't use that language in front of me. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to talk like that, and I don't want to hear somebody else talk like that. And I tell you what, if you haven't done that, and I'm sure there's a lot of people in this room that have, especially if you work in a private workplace, you'll be surprised. If they care about you at all, they'll clean it up. They won't talk that way anymore. They'll be embarrassed if they do, because they know that you don't approve of it and you don't like it. And they don't want to make you uncomfortable, because if they like you at all, they don't want to make you upset. And I was surprised when I started asking the people that worked around me, please don't talk that way. They don't. And then I noticed that when the new people came in that hadn't worked with me, then all of a sudden I heard they got told, don't talk that way around Brian. He doesn't like that. You know? You can clean that up, right? And you're still going to have somebody that says something or does something and doesn't care about you. But the people that do care about you, they're not going to put you through that. And then probably real quickly, I know we're running out of time, pride. It's a really powerful thing. And it's something that I think a lot of us struggle with. That pride of life. You know, the sneaky thing about pride is it'll reach up and grab you when you're doing something good. What I mean by that is, you know, take a person that, I do a lot of things to help people. Maybe I'm someone that cares for the needy or goes and mows the grass for the widow or works with the small children or whatever this person does to help with needy. They help out. Whenever somebody needs it, they're there. And they say, look at all the people that depend on me. Look at all the good things that I do. Look at all the work that I do. Wow, I am great. And look at that person over there. They don't do as much. They're not. Pride got you, didn't it? Pride got you. All of a sudden, you got boasted up. You got the big head. You said, hey, look at all the great things I'm doing. And Satan was right there. He snared you. You're caught because you're prideful. Right? You're only doing that because you're prideful, because you think you're good. I'll give you another example. You say, I'm going to be a spiritual person. I'm going to study my Bible every day. I'm going to go to Bible class every chance I get. I'm going to really be a spiritual person. I'm going to be a godly person. I'm going to do everything the Bible says, each line, each dot. I'm not going to leave anything undone. In fact, you know what? I think I'm going to overdo everything. I'm going to go above and beyond. They go a mile, I'm going to go 2 miles. It's all a good thing, right? That's what we preach. That's what is said every day. We need to be. But then we start looking around. We go, look at them. They're not very spiritual. Look, they're not even making it to Bible class. What? Look at them. What are they doing? When are they preaching a lesson? When are they leading a song? Or when are they writing an article? Gotcha, right? Gotcha. Now all of a sudden, I call them, you know, we're you're spiritually elite, right? We're better than you. There's a lot of Christians that, there's a lot of y'all that have that problem, right? Yes. No, I gotta watch out for that, right? I can be prideful, and I can be thinking about those very same things, and it'll get me. There, we can go through lots of things. Hopefully, when I've been rattling on, you've been thinking about the things that tempt you. And the whole point of this lesson is to say, resist, resist. Do something. Tomorrow, when you make your plan, plan to resist and plan to build those barriers, right? Do the thing that Joseph did. Be willing to go the extra distance. Cut your hand off, as Jesus said, if you have to. Gouge your eye out. I don't want to see anybody doing that, by the way. Hopefully you can find a solution before that. But the point is, go the distance. Do what you have to do. That's really my message tonight, and hopefully it's been useful to you. What's the point of all that? Why do we want to be willing to do that? Because we want to find favor in our Savior's eyes. But Jesus Christ, fortunately, He died for us. Fortunately, He wasn't tempted by Satan. And fortunately, He shed His sins for us so that we may have forgiveness of sins. So when I do stumble, when I do fall, I can come to Jesus and ask for forgiveness. If you haven't obeyed Christ, though, you can't do that. You need to do that first. You need to obey Christ and dedicate your life to serving Him. And it doesn't mean you're going to be perfect. You're going to fall. You're going to fall to some of these very temptations I just talked about. But you will have an advocate with Jesus Christ, right? You will have an advocate with the Son of God and with God Himself. And He will forgive you and wash away those sins. And you can have that forgiveness. So if there's anything we can do tonight, if you struggle with a temptation, if you struggle with sin, and you need to come forward and make it right, I beg you to do that if you need our prayers and our help in doing so. If it's of a private manner, I beg you to do that. Go home and do that. Ask for forgiveness right now and get that. But if you need to obey Christ, the baptistry stands ready. We'd like to help you with that. Please come forward as we stand and sing.